Welcome to Talk with History. I'm your host, Scott, here with my wife and historian, Jen.
Hello.
On this podcast, we give you insights to our history-inspired world travels, YouTube channel journey, and examine history through deeper conversations with the curious, the explorers, and the history lovers out there. Now, before we get into our main topic today, I do want to ask for folks to leave us some reviews. Those always help the show, so you can drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can reply to the polls on Spotify or drop us some stars over there. It really does help the show grow. Today's episode takes us south to the beautiful town of Lexington, Virginia, and the historic campus of Washington and Lee University. But this isn't your typical college campus tour. We're heading to a place steeped in controversy and Civil War history, the Lee Chapel, where Confederate General Robert E. Lee himself is buried. Lee, a complex and fascinating figure, remains a powerful symbol for many. Love him or loathe him, his story is undeniably woven into the fabric of American history. Join us as we explore the Lee Chapel, delve into Lee's life and legacy, and unpack the ongoing debate surrounding this Confederate icon. All right, Jen, so this was one of those graves that we made the effort to get out to go see because, I mean, you can't, in American history, the kind of giants of history, whether controversial or not, don't get too much bigger than our topic today.
Yeah, when we talk about the Civil War, and it's still a huge subject today, I even get people who don't like me to use the term Civil War. They want to hear war between states. And you'll find that depicted on a lot of things. It's even still on the Iwo Jima Memorial. It says the war between the states.
That's right.
So when you're talking about the leaders of that moment in history, it's always Lincoln, Jefferson Davis, Grant, and Lee.
And it's one of those things that we try to do, and I will both of us on the back for this, because we do our best to give context to the historical events or the historical figures that we're covering, either in a video or on a podcast. And that is a very tricky thing to do without appearing to lean one way or the other on a ton of topic. But context is so important. Now, this is a relatively simple event that you and I did. We went and visited the gravesite of someone well-known. But there's so much context surrounding him.
Yeah.
That there's been many books written about Robert E. Lee.
Well, I think the issue that people have, and I'm just conjuring this, is if you try to give any positive annotations about something that was so controversial and negative, that you're looking as if you condoned that person's entire actions and their resume. And that's not true. If you look at a sculptor or a painting and you say that's a well-done painting or that's a well-done sculptor, even if it's of a controversial figure, you're not saying that you agree with that figure and every historic action that figure ever took. And so that's where the issue lies, is as a historian, we have to point out the truth. We have to point out the facts. So if you're pointing to, in this instance, Robert E. Lee's grave and the sculpture of him on top of it, and it is well done. It's a great depiction of him. It's very human-like. It does look like he's sleeping. But if you point out that it's a well-done sculpture, people will jump on, well, you must like Robert E. Lee. And that's not true. And it wouldn't matter if it was true or not. Historically, it doesn't matter if I like Robert E. Lee. What matters is I'm pointing out that the sculpture is well done. And that is a fact. And so those are the things that are hard for historians, and we try to just give you all the facts and the context of what is happening, when it's happening, who is making it, why it looks the way it does, and then you can decide how you feel about it. My feeling about it should have no bearing on how you feel about something. My feelings about something as a historian should just be like, I want to make sure you have all the information out there that's primary sourced, period. it shouldn't matter what side those sources come from. It's just you have it all at your disposal to make your decisions. And so when we talk about controversial figures, and Robert E. Lee is one of them, his embeddedness in American history and American culture cannot be removed. And so we are going to give him his due diligence and his due part and talk about him and tell you the facts of the end of his life and the after his life after the Civil War. And we'll talk a little bit of before the Civil War because it has an impact on what he ends up after the Civil War. But we're gonna tell the truth about all of it. And that's where we went and visited.
Yeah, so this was part of our kind of larger trip last October, right? We had done some Western Virginia history, some Hatfields McCoys, which was very fun. If you're listening to this, we have a past episode, podcast episode on the Hatfield McCoys locations that we visited. So I encourage you to go back and listen to that. But we were driving back home to Norfolk, and we went through Lexington to Washington Lee University.
So you have to realize Lexington, Virginia is very Western Virginia. It's not anything we ever hit driving up and down to DC. It's not like going to Richmond. Richmond was easier to hit. Lexington was one of those, oh, that's pretty out there. So the only way we really visited, and we only visited this one time, was on our way back from being in Eastern Kentucky. Lexington, Virginia is a very historic town. VMI is there, which was our first time visiting the VMI campus.
That's cool.
It was very cool. We also visited the graves of Stonewall Jackson. Stonewall Jackson's house is there. And then I would say they share a border, VMI and Washington and Lee University. It's like they're right beside each other. So to visit Lee's grave, he's buried on the campus of Washington and Lee University.
And Washington, I didn't realize how long Washington and Lee University has been around. Now, obviously, it wasn't always Washington and Lee University. It started off as just Washington University.
Yeah, it's a private liberal arts college in Lexington, Virginia. It was established in 1749 as Augusta Academy. It's one of the oldest institutions of higher learning in the United States. They eventually we'll name it after George Washington. And that's where it got its name, Washington University, and had that name for a very long time until Robert E. Lee comes to be president of the school. And it's even after Lee's death that they add the Lee to become Washington and Lee University. But it goes by Augusta Academy until 1776. Then it's Liberty Hall Academy to 1796. And then in 1796, before Washington's death, it becomes Washington Academy. Until the War of 1812, then it's Washington College at 1813 until 1870 when it becomes Washington and Lee University.
Yeah, it's pretty wild to me because, right, as someone like myself, I went to the Naval Academy. That's been around for quite some time, 1845, 1850. The West Point has been around a few years longer than that. This is like 100 years before both of those were founded. So it was pretty incredible to go. Beautiful campus, but we went there with kind of one goal in mind, and that was to go visit Robert E. Lee's, I guess really his crypt. Is that what you would call it?
Family crypt. So in the fall of 1865, the financially ruined former general of the Confederacy, Robert E. Lee, was offered several business opportunities, but instead he chose to accept to become Washington College's president. And he stated that he chose that to become the college's president because he had a desire to train young men to do their duty. And during his tenure, he established the first journalism course. He added engineering courses, a business school, a law school. I think we remember his office was in the downstairs of the chapel. He met with every student at the time who were male to be good gentlemen.
Right. He said they had no strict rules, but that was really the one guideline. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you also brought up during the video was part of the reason he accepted this position was he couldn't go back to Arlington.
Yes. So let's we talk about that in another video, and I think it's important that people understand this. Arlington National Cemetery is originally Robert E. Lee's home, his plantation. Arlington House was his house where he lived with his wife, Mary Ann Custis Lee. And if you hear the name Custis, it's because she is a descendant of George Washington Custis, who is a descendant of George Washington's adopted children from his wife, Martha Custis, her first husband's Custis. They had two children together when George marries her. And I wanted understood, he married her and he owns everything the Custis family owned. The Custis don't hold on to any property after they are married to George Washington. It doesn't work that way in colonial times.
It goes to the husband.
It all goes to the man.
Yep.
It doesn't stay in some kind of trust fund for the Custis family. Now, what George Washington did is he recognized the land that came with the children. He knows what land was originally their father's land. So he makes sure that their inheritance includes their father's land.
And I think it probably just happened via the marriage, but I think he was intentional about some sort of formalization of his adoption of the children.
Well, the thing is, so people ask that sometimes at Mount Vernon, did he adopt the children? And the truth is, he doesn't have to formally adopt the children like we do today. That doesn't happen.
It was part of the whole package.
It's part of the marriage.
Right. It's part of the marriage.
When you marry, you're adopting the children. Now, what he did do is he recognizes them
right
as his lineage, as his descendants.
And that's what I was inferring earlier, was he was intentional later about saying, again, recognizing that they are his children.
Yes.
And so they've argued, right? We've made some reels, Instagram reels that got pretty big because people weren't aware of this lineage. And so when you say, hey, Robert E. Lee lived at Arlington, everybody thinks, wait, I thought that was George Washington's land. Well, it was, but that's because he married a descendant.
Yes. And so people get, what happens is people use the law of today and try to push it on colonial law, and it wasn't the same. So today, you do have to formally adopt children. Today, children who come from a different descendant and might have some inheritance from that, keep that inheritance usually, even if they do have a stepfather or stepmother, that inheritance can be protected under that child. That's not the same in colonial times. So when Martha Washington marries George Washington owns everything that Martha Washington brings into the marriage, which was everything that her first husband owned.
Right.
Which included the land that is now Arlington National Cemetery.
Yeah. And I just want to, because you mentioned that in the video, I think it's, again, important context. Mm-hmm. That is part of the reason that Robert E. Lee accepts this position mm-hmm. down at the university, is because he can't go home to Arlington, because Arlington is now owned essentially by, I think it was still the government, like Secretary of War still had the deed or something like that.
So what happens is eventually George Washington's descendant, his great grandson, will build Arlington House. They inherit the land. It is original land of the Custis family. George Washington makes sure it gets passed down to those children. They still have it. They haven't lost it in any kind of financial ruin. I always emphasize, if they didn't win the Revolutionary War, it's one of the first things that would have been taken from them was their land. If not their lives, their land definitely would have. So because they won the Revolutionary War, because George Washington preserves his place in history, because he's the president, that land is preserved. So it is inherited by the Custis children. Arlington House will eventually be built by George Washington Custis. And he leaves it to his daughter. And she marries Robert E. Lee, and they are married in that house, and that house becomes Robert E. Lee's house, because again, he's the man. So when he marries her, her stuff becomes his stuff. This is 1800s still, so things are still owned by men, even though I think at this point you could make an argument for her owning this. But because it's Robert E. Lee's land, and because the Civil War breaks out,
and to your point, he lost, so they took it from him.
Yeah, well, they take it from him even before he lost.
Right.
Right? So he leaves, she leaves after, because the Union soldiers come to commandeer the land. It's right across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. So they come and take the land. Now, at first, they just commandeer the house and the land. But then it's General Postmaster Meigs who can't find a place to bury more soldiers. Alexandria National Cemetery gets filled up with soldiers. And they go, where can we bury more Civil War dead? We need national cemeteries. Where is some land available for national cemeteries? Meigs, who went to school with Lee, mad at Lee, said,
I'm going to bury him here.
Yeah, Lee's a traitor to me, and I'm going to make sure Lee never gets to come home to his home. I'm going to start burying them in Lee's garden. So that's where the first soldier is. William Christensen is the first soldier. He's buried in Lee's garden.
And it's funny because there's actually a picture, I cut it in the video, and we've used it before, of a bunch of soldiers, right, Civil War soldiers at Arlington House. And the Arlington House kind of still looks the same today. So again, to your point, you know, let's play the what if game. Had Lee not lost, he would have got most likely his land back. Yeah. He would have got Arlington House back, but he did lose. So the government kept it and they used it for what it is. And so again, he had no home to go home to.
He had no home to go home.
And
to.
So when he was offered this position in Lexington, he takes it.
He takes it because not only does it become the president of Washington College, it comes with a house.
Yes.
It comes with a house on campus where the president can live. So this house at Washington and Lee University, the Lee House, is the house that he will live in from the end of the Civil War to his death. So it's the only other house he has after Arlington House, really.
After the Civil War.
After the Civil War. So he comes down. He's there for about 5 years. And in that time, he decides to build University Chapel. So University Chapel was constructed between 1867 and 1868 at the request of Robert E. Lee. And it is his son, George Washington Custis Lee, with details from an architect of engineering from VMI and who helps build the chapel. So the chapel is actually built by Lee's son. And it was known as College Chapel at the time. And the centerpiece of the chapel now, even though it's like it plays a part of a Christian church, I think they said that it never really was a
church. You said in the video, it was always a chapel, but it was never like an official church.
Yeah.
So there was no congregation that regularly came there. So I assume if it's a chapel, it's held for occasional services for those who want to use it on campus.
Exactly. And there's two big portraits in there, one of George Washington and one of Robert E. Lee. So, and the George Washington one is done by Gilbert Stuart, which is the famous painter of George Washington. And then the other one of Lee was from 1866. It's by Jay Reed. And now it says in 2018, they replaced the portrait of George Washington by Charles Wilson Peel from the Washington Family Collections, which I think maybe the Gilbert Washington one they wanted back in the National Archives.
National Archives, yeah.
So it was replaced, but it's still two of these huge paintings of the two namesakes of the college. And that's what's in there.
Now, it was interesting, just behind the scenes. So we're out there visiting. Beautiful. It's fall, right? It was just absolutely gorgeous. We just beat in kind of like what looked like a large group of either students or high schoolers or something like that, kind of touring the campus. But we beat them into the chapel. But they actually, and I can understand why, they asked us to leave a fair amount of our stuff at the front. So, hey, yeah, I always carry a pocket knife on me, right? I just leave it in my pocket. I forget it's there. And they asked, hey, can you leave that up front? We'll watch it for you. You can come back and get it. Because, and maybe this has happened in the past, I'm just assuming, but they don't want people going in there. Again, when you're going into the crypt, and we'll talk about the gallery that's downstairs in his office, when you're going into an area of such a controversial figure, they're probably want to beware of someone who might want to do harm to these historical artifacts.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, whether or not your feelings are about these things, they are still for everyone to see, and they are still for everyone to learn from.
Absolutely.
So if you're feeling they get to your part to take something away from that, it really is not fair to everybody else who could be learning something from this and being able to see something from this. And that, as a museum professional, we always talk about your role in preserving the past. Is your job is to preserve it for future generations. Your job is to it's not to make judgments on it. Your job is just to keep it in the best condition you can for future generations. That's your job. You're a custodian of it. And so whether or not what somebody wants to see when they see it or how they feel when they see it is not up to you. It's the fact that they can see it and they can, it's there for them to learn from. So what is behind, after you walk in the chapel, and what is behind basically the wall,
the stage, kind of
the stage, is this huge statue called, it's called the recumbent statue of Robert E. Lee asleep on the battlefield. And it's basically a white statue of Lee looking like he's asleep on a bed in his uniform from the Civil War. It was by Edward Valentine, who Valentine did a lot of these controversial statues.
I mean, he must have been relatively well known at the time because his name's kind of attached, right? Yeah. He, like you said, he's done a fair amount of statues of in that era. Yeah. So he must have been relatively well known. I mean, he's good at what he does.
I mean, he
was good.
It looks very lifelike. If you want to see what Robert E. Lee probably looked like in full figure, it looks like a sleeping person. But Valentine did Stonewall Jackson statue. He did busts of Jefferson Davis. He did other Lee statues that were removed, have since been removed, like ones that were in Richmond, ones where that were in the Capitol building. And so he made a lot of these busts and statues of these controversial figures. And people often mistake it as like a sarcophagus because it looks like a sarcophagus.
It does.
It looks like,
because it's on this kind of brick rectangular pedestal.
Yeah. And it's been a room that you'll see in our video. Like, you can walk around it. You can walk 360 completely around it. There's stuff on the walls. I think quotes from Lee and different kinds of things. And so it's very much like you can walk around the statue and it looks like the size of a body. So yeah, it looks like a coffin.
It's life size.
Would fit right underneath it, but it's not a sarcophagus. He's not buried inside of it. He's buried in the crypt below. So it really is just a statue of Robert E. Lee asleep on the battlefield. That's all on the first floor.
Yeah. And then you actually go down into where the crypt, the family crypt, I'll call it, actually is.
Yeah. And that statue was dedicated in 1883. So that's about 13 years after Lee has been dead. And like, he's buried in the crypt under the stairs. So like you said, so if you go under the stairs, there's a crypt down there with basically all the Lee family.
It's a whole plot. I mean, his wife, I mean, and we show some kind of good still pictures if you want to go take a look at it.
You're not allowed to take video down there. So we took still pictures of it. And so that, I would say it's the bottom floor, but when you walk up to the chapel from the side, that's like,
You're walking out on the ground floor and then it goes down. So I guess technically you're walking in on the second floor and then you go down to the first, but it's built on kind of a hillside. Yeah. And so that's where you walk down into the crypt area. There's the crypt area. And then there's also like a gallery, and even the full gallery wasn't even open. Yeah. We got to see part of it, but not the full thing was open.
So I think it's going through some kind of transition, as you can imagine, the gallery. I think at one point they probably was a lot more Southern leaning. And I think now they're going to try to tell a more well-rounded story. And so I think that's what is being done down there. But the things that haven't changed is Lee's office was down there. And so they have a recreation of what his office would have looked like with the original furniture.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
And they have recreations of the artifacts of letters and things on his desk. So what it would have looked like, which was dark, but what it would look like with Lee working in there. And then, so in the crypt is General Lee, is very like right in the middle. Robert E. Lee is right in the middle. And then his wife, Marianna Custis Lee. And then there's seven children: George Washington Custis Lee, Mary Custis Lee, William Henry Lee, Ann Carter Lee, Robert E. Lee Jr., Eleanor Agnes Lee, and Mildred Lee are there. His parents are there: Revolutionary War Major General Henry Lighthorse Lee, and then his favorite horse. Traveler is buried right outside the chapel. And so there's a door there, like a glass door. And right outside is the gravesite for Traveler. And Traveler is the famous horse of Robert E. Lee. And so visitors will leave coins and apples and things. Traveler outlives Lee, but not by much. He steps on a nail, the horse, and gets septus and dies, I think, a year after Lee died.
And honestly, it was interesting reading up on this relatively famous historic horse because apparently the horse was incredibly spirited, wouldn't let anybody ride it. But when Lee saw it, it was, okay, that's going to be my horse, and was quite fond of it. I even read when I was making the video that he had these whistles that he would train Traveler on. And so it was just interesting reading about this horse of someone as famous as Robert E. Lee.
Well, what's interesting too is Traveler, looks like he's about 14 years old, and that's decently old for a horse. But most of the time, people don't bury horses. That's a rare thing. And if a horse dies, even famous horses, you usually don't bury the entire horse. Usually you might bury the head. I hate to sound graphic here. And the rest of the horse is used for other purposes because it's a huge animal. So for Traveler to be buried is a big deal. And like I said, it's very rare. You hear of some horses being buried in their entirety. Secretariat would be one of them, but it's still rare for entire horses.
It's rare, but to be honest, I'm not too surprised that happened at the time, because at the time, Robert E. Lee was so well known and so famous and revered in that part of the country that kind of he had that halo effect of everything else around him. And that part of his mystique, part of the story of him was his horse, right? His horse was also famous. And so again, super rare, but I'm not too surprised that this happened down there.
Yeah. And we will say before we even went, we had people tell us, oh, they removed that. They removed Lee's horse. They removed it. And we were like, oh, well, we better get over there and
they
film.
Said they removed the marker, but yeah. We got over there and there was like two markers.
Yeah. So nothing was removed. Everything was the same. So just so you know, it's there. If you want to see our video, it's there. The University Chapel was officially renamed from Lee Chapel on June 4th, 2021 by the university's Board of Trustees. So it was Lee Chapel for a long time. And then they renamed it in 2021 to University Chapel. And that's what you'll hear today. And again, you can go in and visit. It's free to tour it. You can go behind and see the statue, go downstairs, see the crypt, go see his office, and then the gallery. Hopefully the gallery will be more up to date so you can visit. But it's a place there for you. It's right beside VMI. So if you wanted to look at VMI as well, it's very Gothic like buildings over there at VMI. Yeah,
beautiful campus.
But beautiful big campus. But the other place we went, is we walked up the hill to Lee House.
Yeah, it might be less than 100 yards from the chapel.
Yeah, it's not very far. And this is the house where Robert E. Lee lived as he was president. This is where his wife will live, the family will live while he's president until his death.
And that's where the presidents of the university today still live.
And so it's an active house. So we couldn't go inside of it. And we tried to be respectful and not really film too much.
Yeah, like we didn't walk up to the porch and stand on the porch and film right there on the porch. We stayed off to the side because there is a sign out front that says private residence, no entry allowed or something like that. So it was cool, but that's where Robert E. Lee lived from 1865 to 1870 until his death.
It's neat to know that this was like Lee's house and to be able to see it. And so it is within viewing distance of the chapel. So when you think about after the Civil War and Lexington and the 5 years that Lee had after losing that great war, this is his life was basically this campus. I don't think he went far from here. It was like my house to work in my office, back to my house. And this was basically the last 5 years of his life. His days were filled here. So it was neat to see what happened to this man after such a tremendous loss to his career and to his life and to basically his whole livelihood and basically his ancestry, because they lost everything. And so to be there and to see what happened there at the end was a neat ending to American history, and to see what happened in those later years after Reconstruction and the Civil War. So it was cool to be there.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things that, you know, obviously everybody's happy about the way things turned out, but we're still visiting these locations. It's just different actually being there in the space where these giants of history spent their last days. Like, we are walking the same path in the same location that these huge historical figures did as well. It was pretty cool. Well, folks, that wraps up our visit to what used to be called Lee Chapel, now University Chapel, and our exploration of Robert E. Lee's legacy. Lee's story is a complicated one, filled with heroism, controversy, and a whole lot of history. Whether you see him as a brilliant strategist or a defender of a horrific institution, there's no denying his lasting impact on the American narrative. We hope this episode sparked some interesting conversations and maybe even challenged some preconceived notions. Remember, history is complicated, it needs context, is full of shades of gray, and Lee's story is a prime example. Thank you for listening to the Talk With History podcast, and please reach out to us at our website, talkwithhistory.com. But more importantly, if you know someone else that might enjoy this podcast, please share it with them, especially if you think today's topic would interest a friend. Shoot them a text and tell them to look us up. We rely on you, our community, to grow, and we appreciate you all every day. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.